Let's find out what's happening in the Boston sports world as we check in with Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Hello there, Mr. Finn.
Hey, Rich, how are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you?
No complaints. Back after a week off, so I was recharged for about 10 minutes this morning, and now I need another vacation.
Right, then you talked to Mike Violet, and it all went downhill.
That's usually how it goes. He usually calls me while I'm in the Dunkin's line, so I have to scramble through that and get to the phone before he starts up. But I usually get there by about 5 seconds to spare.
That's perfect. By the way, I was thinking of you today. I sent off a little package of goodies. You should be receiving within a couple of days, I think, your Downtown Hall of Fame swag, the official Hall of Fame coffee or tea or whatever else you choose to put in it mug.
Ooh, I can't wait to get that. I'll do an Instagram post for like my 35 followers on there because I'm over 50 years old. But I'll be glad to have another coffee mug to the collection. I saw what those look like, and they're spectacular. So thank you very much.
Oh, yeah. Stephen Tobolowsky posing with his. So look, if it's good enough for Ned Ryerson, it's good enough for us.
That's right. Every time I see him, it makes me want to rewatch Groundhog Day, I guess was a form of Groundhog Day in itself, right?
Yeah, it is indeed. Also, I put my copy of the book in the package, too, so I can get you to write something powerful and meaningful that I will probably tear up over when I read.
It'll be, hi, Rich. Hope you enjoy the book, Chad.
A friend always. Chad, have a good summer, Chad.
Right. I'll see if homeroom was crazy this year.
Yeah.
See you in the fall.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's see. Let's talk a little Red Sox here. Boy, the funny season. You know, when I think they're playing well, they go in the tank for a week or so. When you're just about ready to write them off, they put things together and didn't score a lot of runs this weekend, but the pitching was strong, and they managed to take 2 out of 3 in New York. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, 2 out of 3 in New York. Can't argue with that. Back to 500. It is really a strange season. I mean, I think if you'd asked at the beginning of the year or a month ago, you'd have said, well, they're going to hit. They're going to score a lot of runs. The pitching is the question. And that was a very reasonable take. And for a while, it was the case. And now they can't score any runs. But there are some hopeful signs with the pitching staff, at least with the younger guys. I mean, Chris Sale injury is devastating. You feel bad for him, and he was pitching so well. Feels like we may not see him again this season. So that's a bummer, but Brambeau stepping up here. Garrett Whitlock looks like he's going to be at least a middle-of-the-rotation starting pitcher, maybe even better than that, which is a very valuable guy to have, and certainly a win for Chaim Bloom, who could use one in terms of some of his transactions, stealing him away from the Yankees in the Rule 5 draft a couple years ago. So some progress there. It's been a long time since the Red Sox developed a pitcher. I guess the last starter, you would say, was probably Clay Buchholz. And if you don't count him, and some among us won't, it would be John Lester. So to see Bayo making these steps more than anything else is a great positive. And one of the things you would have said, put high on the list of things you wanted to accomplish this year.
So were they completely tone deaf? Did they not understand the optics of activating?
Yeah.
You know, they active in the middle of Pride Month. They activate a guy, and Matt Dermody, I guess is how he pronounces it. I hope to never say it again. Who they knew they would option out as soon as he started. They couldn't find some other mediocre pitcher in the system, but that clown.
Yeah, I don't really get it. It just makes no sense. For a bunch of different reasons. Obviously, the optics were terrible. He was lined up to pitch on Pride Night until they DFA'd him after the game, which may have been the plan all along, but he's still going to be in Worcester and part of the organization. So who knows, maybe they see him again at some other point if he pitches well down there. Don't think anybody's rooting for that. But he's you talk about replacement-level players, he's not even really that. He's a pitcher of over 30 years old who 450 ERA down in AAA, ERA over 5 in his brief stints in the major leagues. He was a relief pitcher. He wasn't going to give you anything in terms of innings. You know, they got 4 out of him, which is probably the most they could have expected. Just there are guys like him everywhere. There was no reason to keep him around if they saw his tweet history. There was really no reason to sign him in the first place beyond organizational depth, and those guys are a dime a dozen. I haven't heard a logical explanation out of Chaim Bloom about why this guy is part of the organization, why they brought him in the first place. And I don't think we're ever going to get one.
We're talking with Chad Finn here on Downtown. So here we are, as you mentioned, they're 33-33. We're about 6 weeks away from the trade deadline, and it feels like they're right in the same boat they were in last year because of that extra wild card. Yeah, they're still in the running for that, but no indication that this is a team that can go on any kind of a late season run to make them a contender for anything beyond a brief playoff appearance. Do they do what they did last year, which to me was confusing at best, and that was, I guess, you know, trade some experienced guys and then for some reason try to get some other talent? Can you pick one? Could you be a buyer or a seller? Is that too hard?
I don't think you can walk that tightrope. I mean, it's extreme. The degree of difficulty is really high.
Yeah.
On trying to bring in guys, move on from some other guys, and get 75% of it right. That's really, really difficult and did not work last year. I mean, you look back on what they probably should have done. They should have traded J.D. Martinez. Had a nice resurgence with the Dodgers, but there was absolutely no reason to keep him last year if they had no intention of signing him. Probably could have moved on from Eovaldi too, and seen what they could have got there. Although he might have been hurt at the time, I can't remember. He was off and on so much last year. But there were things they should have done to go all in as a seller. I think it's a misread of the fan base in situations like that more than anything else, where they assume that fans are going to be ticked off if they commit to, they never use the word rebuild, bridge years as close as they ever come. If they commit to blowing something up halfway through the season, they think fans are going to be angered by that. And so most Red Sox fans are going to recognize when it's the time to do something like that. I think they probably would now if, you know, this team loses five in a row. You know, they're capable of winning five in a row, but if they lose five in a row, and you get toward August 1st, and it looks like you're out of it, and you're not going to be in wild card contention. They have teams they still need to leapfrog now to get in the mix for that seventh spot. So if they shop Duvall or Justin Turner or even Jansen or Martin, or guys on two-year contracts, I think fans would be accepting of that. But the front office and ownership is so conscious of not looking like they're ever waving the white flag, when I think fans recognize there are times where it's the best thing to do that.
Yeah, it's tough, though, because, as you mentioned, the guys that would have some value out there that they might consider trading are the guys who are playing quite well for them. Justin Turner, another one that you could see them ship out, but he's been great and obviously a good clubhouse guy.
He is, yeah. He's been exactly what they thought. I mean, think about it as kind of a challenge trade, Turner coming here and Martinez going to the Dodgers, even though they weren't swapped for each other. Technically, that's really what the teams did with the signing each as a free agent. You'd probably say the Dodgers won that based on the production, but Turner has been a really good fit in terms of personality, and he's someone who's valuable as a hitter, even if his numbers aren't spectacular, because he takes a ton of pitches, works the count, and has a lot of behind-the-numbers kind of value. I actually thought Devers was going to end up being way more productive this year because they have guys in the lineup with him who take pitches and should draw walks and get on base, and it just hasn't really worked out that way on Devers' end of it so much. But, these guys, I think Duvall is a great clubhouse guy too and was phenomenal before he got hurt for about 10 games. So there are things to like here if you're the Red Sox fan who hopes they keep these guys, and there's a lot to like if you're another team and looks at their roster and says, you know what, this guy would be a pretty good pickup for the stretch run for us.
On the Celtics front, I guess good news, bad news for the current occupant of the head coaching job. Listen, we got you that veteran assistant coach, and at the same time, we hired your successor.
Which one?
You know? Yeah.
Charles Lee or Sam, MCI's Sam Cassell.
Right.
And, oh boy, we got dogs here in the neighborhood today.
Look out.
Yeah, it's, Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. I wrote a little about that for tomorrow. Just finished it up today. But both these guys are more qualified to be a head coach than Mazzulla, even if you count what Mazzulla did this year, which was coaching, 20 playoff games on top of the regular season. So he's got a little experience under his belt now. But Cassell's been a NBA assistant coach since Mazzulla was at West Virginia playing in the Final Four in 2009. He's just won three championships, one of the Celtics as a player. He's just got that pedigree. And Lee's a guy who's really well-regarded. He was with Budenholzer in Atlanta and then Milwaukee, and he was came into the league as an assistant with that 2014 Hawks team where they won 60 games. Al Horford was one of their key players that year, and the guy probably should have got a head coach job a long time ago. So it's going to be interesting to see how Mazzulla navigates this, because he can't be sensitive to it. He's got to delegate, but the guys he's going to be delegating to probably have a better feel for things on how to run a team than he does. So it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out.
Have the ESPN cuts come yet? I know there was talk late last week that they were looking to reduce payroll a little bit more, and some big names were being floated around as possibilities. People like Susie Colber, maybe Steve Young.
Yes, the targets are going to be people who with big salaries who don't work a lot, which I guess is how the world works. But sports specific people, which Colber's associated with NFL. Young obviously is. Neil Everett's been with SportsCenter 23 years on the late night West Coast version, said he's one of the people being let go. So I don't know. There's going to be a lot of rumors out there, and some will be true and some won't be. But I think if you think about people you associate with ESPN for a long time that are still there that you don't see a whole heck of a lot of anymore, those are probably the ones in the most danger.
I've always aspired to have that description. Makes a lot of money, doesn't work much.
Yeah, when did that become a bad thing? Come on, these guys are beating the system. Keep them around.
Right, exactly. Hey, you've got a cool event coming up. I believe it's Wednesday night. You and Howard Bryant together?
Yes, it's the Silver Unicorn Bookstore in Acton. It's owned by Paul Swidan, who used to write for...
Oh, yeah, Paul used to come on our show quite a bit.
Yeah, he does a book club for Boston.com. He quit the baseball writing business and became a very successful bookseller. So I've gone out there to help him with things before. I helped with a Tyler Kepner event for one of his books about baseball. It was one that connected baseball and nine pitches. And then Wickersham, we did an event together, too, for his Patriots book. And they're always great. So it's fun to actually be the person who has the book this time.
Yeah, absolutely. That'll be a great time. Howard's book is also terrific. So have a good time with that. Enjoy your first drink out of that downtown mug when it arrives, and we'll catch up with you very soon.
Oh, be on the lookout on Instagram. And if someone wants to be my 36th follower.
I already follow you, but we'll share it and get it up maybe into at least the upper 30s, if not the lower 40s.
Nice, yeah. I'd appreciate that. I'm looking forward to it and to finding something nice about your book that doesn't involve the next school year.
That'll be wonderful. Thanks, Chad.
See you, Ritz.
All right. Take care of those dogs. Chad Finn, Boston Globe, with us here on Downtown.